Chapter 52. Literary Thieves. Thou shalt not steal. Exodus. 1887. Sarah Cross answered Gill's attack in the March Journal, although a Chicago student had written to Mrs. Eddy, quote, "Do not reply to it. He cannot hurt you or your cause by any such disjointed articles," end quote. The message of spiritual progress in March was a new hymn from Mrs. Eddy's pen, "Feed My Sheep." Shepherd, show us how to go o'er the hillside steep, how to gather, how to sow, how to feed thy sheep. We will listen for thy voice, lest our footsteps stray. We will follow and rejoice all the rugged way. Thou wilt bind the stubborn will, wound the callous breast, make self-righteousness be still, break earth's stupid rest. Strangers on a barren shore, laboring long and lone, we would enter by the door, and thou knowest thine own. So when day grows dark and cold, fear or triumph harms, lead thy lambkins to the fold, take us in thine arms. Feed the hungry, heal the heart, till the morning's beam, white as wool, ere we depart, Shepherd, wash us clean. The lead article in the September Journal had been a revision of An Allegory by Mrs. Eddy, which included this paragraph. The stranger next enters a dark, shabby dwelling, and he saith unto them, quote, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven," end quote. But they understand not his saying. They have no conception of spiritual riches or immortal cravings. They are literary thieves, puffed up by stealing in the name of truth, and they took the stranger's pearls and would kill him. 20 years earlier, Mrs. Eddy had stood alone, endeavoring to give the science of man to a resisting world. At one time, she had walked miles to a house where she had been told someone was interested in her message, only to have the door slammed in her face. Literally and figuratively, doors had been slammed in her face from the outset. But she labored on, sustained by love alone. By her incessant labors, she had roused the world to interest in her message, and now on every side, thieves were snatching her pearls and rushing off to sell them to a ready market. Mind Cure publications were proliferating. Author after author was borrowing from her book without giving credit, else explaining Christian Science or rewriting Science and Health, while teaching his own material misconceptions and calling it Christian Science. A letter from one lost lamb was published in the journal under Questions Answered. Dear Mrs. Eddy, not as an idle inquirer, but as an earnest, sincere thinker after the truth, do I address you. And I hope you will, out of the goodness of your heart, answer me. I have completed a course of mental or Christian Science lectures. My teacher is a practicing metaphysician of Chicago. She is also a theosophist, and during her lectures, she introduced much of the theosophic teachings and belief. When we were through, she advised us to purchase Sinnott's works and several other books of like nature. I will say first that I have your book, and that with my Bible, I study constantly. After her suggestion, I bought Sinnott's Esoteric Buddhism and have read it. I am now all confusion and mixed. I cannot reconcile it with the life and teachings of Jesus Christ. I cannot reconcile it with your teachings, consequently. Now, will you help me? Are you a theosophist? My teacher says theosophy is metaphysics, Christian Science, only more so. Sinnott's book speaks of, quote, the necessity of evil, end quote. Do, quote, inanimate forms progress onward until a human soul has been formed, end quote. Do you believe, quote, in the certainty of some hundred many earth lives to come, the repeated incarnations of a soul, end quote. He says, quote, our planet and ourselves are no more creations than an iceberg, end quote. He says, quote, the seventh principle of man is undefinable, incomprehensible, and is the only God recognized by esoteric knowledge, end quote. Does that agree with your doctrine? He also says, quote, you can be immortal in good by identifying oneself with God, or can be immortal in evil by identifying oneself with Satan, end quote. He says there are utterly unspiritual egos. Do you believe in the, quote, the system of seven worlds of man, end quote, and in the seven principles that the occult science teaches men are composed of? Tell me, dear Mrs. Eddy, can one be a thorough, consistent believer in the teachings of theosophy and the occult sciences, and at the same time a thorough, consistent believer in Christian Science and a successful healer? I have studied in order that I may be able to live the pure Christian life here and do good. Oh, I want to do much good, and I see daily where I can do it if I am in the right path. And so it is for this I ask your help and advice, which I feel sure you'll not refuse to give me. If Divine Spirit created man in his own image and likeness, how can there, quote, be unspiritual egos, end quote? Or how can man be spiritually evil and immortally evil? Hoping anxiously for an early reply, I am sincerely yours, Mrs. H. D. Cope. Hopefully, Mrs. Eddy's answer in the journal helped the hundreds of others making similar inquiries. Answer. Your interesting questions found ready response in my heart and enlisted my interest in your situation, as hundreds of others are doing, but for lack of time, remain unanswered. I can only touch briefly the borderland of comment on the vast questions proposed. Just now, the darkest spot on the horizon of mortal mind that Christian Science can illumine is envy, and the strife for, quote, who shall be greatest, end quote. It pushes Christianity aside to elbow in a crowd of robbers that enter not in by the door, truth, but would climb up some other way. Obscure, unlettered, unprincipled people are filling the field as mind healers, who are mind killers, building their only superstructure on false foundations, the power of evil and substance of matter. They are working out through mortal mind the claim of total depravity in all its forms of animal magnetism. They rise on the merits of the true healer to at length fall from their own demerits. The above qualities, entering so largely into their work, engender the most difficult forms of disease. 20 years ago, when I first brought this subject to the consideration of the race, to be a Christian Science mind healer was no bid for respectability, popularity, wealth. It was a sharp appeal to conscience, spiritual growth, moral courage. The question then was, can you drink the cup? On this basis, there was no danger of injuring oneself or one's neighbor. The pioneer work has been done faithfully. Now comes the inquiry, shall this work be overthrown by charlatans of the baser sort? Not but the unselfish purpose, the higher understanding of God, and the love of man are incentives to real mind healing. Once in this direction, and persecution, hardship, sacrifice, only, quote, lead into green pastures and beside the still waters, end quote. Of esoteric Buddhism, its oriental necromancy, philosophy, or religion, I am happily ignorant. Such human philosophy may charm, allure, but it obscures the spiritual sense of divine science. I recommend that you quit other reading and confine yourself for the present to the perusal of the scriptures and my work, Science and Health. This book has a key to the scriptures that never picks the lock, but opens the word only as it turns in the grooves of God. This course pursued, and you will gain consolation and light. Theosophy is not allied to Christian Science. It misleads the understanding, whereas Christian Science enlightens it. In good, there is no necessity for evil. If evil has a necessity, it is to destroy itself. The inanimate does not originate the animate. Intelligence never sprang from non-intelligence. Soul is spirit, infinite and eternal. Hence, soul is neither sinful nor susceptible of growth, can neither sin nor die. Quote, the wages of sin is death, end quote. Soul is immortal spirit and is in nothing unlike him. Mortals entertain a false conception of soul because the senses say God, mind, is in matter. This false view of life, substance, and intelligence is miscalled soul. Flesh was never incarnated. God, made manifest in the flesh, is the divine outer action upon the inner vile affections of mortals. The influence from without cometh from spirit. Whatever is from within is of the flesh. It was a false teacher who told you that Christian Science and Theosophy are one. Man is not as an iceberg. He is the image and likeness of his Maker. And the sunlight of truth melts these frozen hypotheses of error with the warmth of divine love. Man has but one principle, and that is God. And the scripture saith, quote, acquaint now thyself with God, and be at peace, end quote. Good is immortal, and evil is the opposite of good. Hence, evil is mortal. The ego is spirit, and can be nothing else. To our last touching inquiry, quote, can one believe both Theosophy and Christian Science and be a successful healer, end quote, I answer, no. Quote, as well might a camel go through the eye of a needle, end quote. Christ is the way, and the spiritual idea coincides at no point with the sensual or material. Now, dear friend, follow only the guidance of truth and love. Then you will be at peace and heal the sick and sinner. Yours tenderly. Theosophists were not the only borrowers from Mrs. Eddy's Christian Science. Constant vigilance was necessary for the mother to protect her child on every front. The previous summer, she had published in the journal that the book titled Mind Cure on a Material Basis was, quote, shockingly unreliable, incorrect, and misleading on the subject of Christian Science, end quote. To which she added that, quote, such works as S. E. Titcomb's and Dr. W. F. Evans's are flooding the land, only to darken the light of science, end quote. On the 8th of February, Julius Dresser delivered a lecture at the Church of the Divine Unity. This was a new organization which had been founded in Boston late in 1886 by another dissident student, Luther Marston, M.D., whom Mrs. Eddy had healed and taught 2 or 3 years earlier and who had resided at her college for a time. Dresser's lecture, which he entitled, quote, The True History of Mental Science, end quote, was another attack upon Mrs. Eddy, attributing her great life work to Quimby, totally disregarding her years of unremitting toil, of self-sacrificing labor. The literary thieves in this school of thought were stealing freely from Mrs. Eddy's published works, excusing themselves by claiming that her revelation from Infinite Mind was not a revelation, but a theft. The attack on this front could not be neglected. On the 21st of May, Mrs. Eddy published the following notice in the Boston newspapers. To whom it may concern, Mr. George A. Quimby, son of the late Phineas P. Quimby, over his own signature and before witness, stated in 1883 that he had in his possession, at that time, all the manuscripts that had been written by his father. And I hereby declare that to expose the falsehood of parties publicly intimidating that I have appropriated matter belonging to the aforesaid Quimby, I will pay the cost of printing and publishing the first edition of those manuscripts with the author's name attached, provided that I am allowed first to examine said manuscripts and do find that they were his own compositions and not mine, that were left with him many years ago, or that they have not since his death in 1866 been stolen from my published works. Also, that I am given the right to bring out this one edition under the copyright of the owner of said manuscripts, and all the money accruing from the sales of said book shall be paid to said owner. Some of his purported writings, quoted by Mr. Dresser, were my own words, as near as I can recollect them. There is a great demand for my work, Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures. Hence, Mr. Dresser's excuse for the delay to publish Quimby's manuscripts, namely, that this period is not sufficiently enlightened to be benefited by them, is lost. For if I have copied from Quimby and my book is accepted, it has created a demand for his. Mary Baker G. Eddy. The offer was not accepted. Dishonesty cannot understand an honest heart, nor an honest offer. But Dresser's lecture, which included Mary Patterson's praises of Quimby in the early 60s, was published in pamphlet form, necessitating an answer, which Mrs. Eddy made in the June Journal under the title Mind Healing History. In a peppery pamphlet, Mr. Dresser delivers a stupendous eulogy over the late P.P. Quimby as his healer, and exaggerates and fabricates in Quimby's behalf, but all that is kind, and I wish it was honest. Did I write those articles in Mr. Dresser's pamphlet purporting to be mine? I might have written them 20 or 30 years ago, for I was under the mesmeric treatment of Dr. Quimby. I knew nothing then of the science of mind healing, and I was as ignorant of mesmerism as Eve before she was taught by the serpent. It can be shown that Mr. Dresser tried Quimby's method and relinquished it because he could not heal by it. I denounced it after a few of my first students rubbed heads of their patients, and the immorality of one student opened my eyes to the horrors possible in animal magnetism. His healing was never considered or called anything but mesmerism. I tried to think better of it and to procure him public favor. He was my doctor, and it wounded me to have him despised. The last time I saw him, he said, quote, "You have made me all I am in Portland," end quote. In those days, he needed friends. Why did not Dresser lecture then for Quimby, as he does now? He had no defender then but myself. I believed he was doing good, and even now, knowing as I do the harm in his practice, I would never revert to it but for this public challenge. Is it love for our mutual friend, or envy of the living, that would drag the silent departed so mercilessly before the people? I would touch tenderly his memory, speak reverently of his humane purpose, and name only his virtues, did not the man Dresser drive me, for conscience' sake, to sketch the facts. I cannot defraud humanity of its claims, hide the true discovery, or close my eyes to usurpers casting lots for truth's seamless robe.
Silencing my grief at treading less lightly on the ashes of the dead,
I must write down Christian Science mind healing as the antipodes of Mr. Quimby's theory, if he had one, and of his treatment of disease. It has always been my misfortune to think people better and bigger than they really are. My mistake is to endow another person with my ideal and then make him think it is his own. When I thought Mr. Quimby was doing good, it was natural for me to help him, and hundreds of others I have helped since then, sparing neither ease, time, nor money for this end. The most unselfish motives evoke the most ingratitude, yet it is only by such motives that the best results are achieved. My final discovery of the science of mind healing was the outgrowth of my motives and method. It was after the death of Mr. Quimby, and when I was apparently at the door of death, that I made this discovery in 1866. After that, it took about 10 years of hard work for me to reach the standard of my first edition of Science and Health, published in 1875. Misinterpretations and misapplications of truth constitute all error, and error can only be destroyed by the correct interpretation and application of truth. The animal poison imparted through mortal mind by false or incorrect mental physicians is more destructive to health and morals than are the mineral and vegetable poisons prescribed by the matter physicians. This acknowledgement brings the wrath of mediums and mesmerists upon me, but never warps my purpose to enlighten mankind. I discovered the science of mind healing, and that was enough. It was the way Christ had pointed out, and that fact glorified it. My discovery promises nothing but blessings to every inhabitant of the globe. This glorious prospect seems to incense some degraded minds and stimulate their unscrupulous efforts to thwart its benign influence and defeat its beneficence. If ever Mr. Quimby's ominous manuscripts are brought to light, it will be when my copyrights have expired and the dear-bought treasures of truth are appropriated by both the evil and the good. Then, arm in arm, Mr. Dresser and his skeleton, like Dorcasina and her hero, in female quixotism, may enter the drawing rooms of mind-healing science. Stumbling up my stairs, they may fall unexpectedly into good company. At the time of Dresser's attack in Boston and Gill's attack in a Chicago publication, Mrs. Eddy received an article from and by Joseph Adams, which he was planning to republish in pamphlet form. It borrowed so heavily from her writings that she gave him a sharp rebuke for plagiarizing. He immediately left the Chicago Christian Science Institute, where he was associated with Miss Ellen Brown, and set up independently. By June, he had launched his own publication called the Chicago Christian Scientist. And though he intended to remain a Christian Scientist and teach only from Science and Health, he did not differentiate between Mrs. Eddy's loyal students and those who mouthed her teachings while denying her leadership. When he applied to have his certificate renewed,
Mrs. Eddy wrote him, "You have tried teaching Christian Science. Did you ever find a student who, after taking 12 lessons, was better able than you were to pioneer this cause? Then can you, only 1 year old in this knowledge, know better than I, who have worked it and earned my knowledge of it 21 years, how to carry it out? After over 10 years of experience and success far beyond yours, I learned that nothing but organization would save this cause for mankind and protect it from the devouring disorganizers. You are commanded to go to the lost sheep and gather them in, but you go to the goats to gather them in." The dissidents and literary thieves were legion, but they were not the only problem the leader had to meet.